We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is the Dale and Keith Show. Dale and Keith, middays on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back to the third hour of Dale and Keefe with Meter and Bradford. Happy New Year, everybody. Do you get sick of people saying that too?
No, man, especially not this year.
Not this year.
Are you kidding me?
No, exactly. Definitely not this year.
I'm on to 2022.
Happy New Year, Bradford.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you very
you're
much.
Really, like,
you're one for three today.
You're one for three.
He's happy-go-lucky.
You're the straw that stirs
Josh
the drink.
Josh Toronto, yes, he certainly is. But I'll tell you who the straw that stirs the drink is on this show. We had Alex Sokin. We had Tommy Kern. But it all ends with the cleanup hitter. Chaim Bloom, Red Sox chief baseball information officer. And, Chaim, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. First time I've hit cleanup probably in my life, so I appreciate it.
Well, according to Meter, it's also the first time anyone's hit cleanup when being the third person. So it's you have to.
It's like that. We have an eight. That's all right. Details. It sounds better to be hitting cleanup, right, Chaim?
Yeah, absolutely.
No doubt about it. You can hit to all fields. That we know. All right, the glacial pace of the Major League Baseball offseason for a guy like me who's a fan at heart. I'm sitting back. Rob and I were just talking about the glory days of the baseball hot stove season. Is it frustrating for you as an executive to deal with the current state of baseball negotiations?
Well, you know, I think it's frustrating from a quality of life standpoint in that, you know, it'd be nice to be able to look forward to a part of the off season where you felt like you could, you know, meaningfully look ahead to the season and kind of shift your focus. And that's just not the case. But I also think it's understandable. I mean, first of all, this is a very unique year where there's so much uncertainty in the world and uncertainty that really, really affects our business. And it has put a drag on the overall pace of the offseason. But also the fact of the matter is, you know, when you're trying to plan and you're trying to, you know, make moves in a competitive environment to better your team, you know, against 29 rivals, the timing of when you make those moves in the offseason doesn't necessarily make them better moves. And that's true for everybody. So, you know, doing something in December as opposed to January isn't going to make that move have any more impact come April, come opening day. So I don't think there ends up being value during the season and having rushed to do something in the off season. And that's not just the case for us. That's the case for every team. So given that we're not putting a ton of value on that, I think you're seeing some things take a little longer. There's no question as an entertainment product, I think it makes it a tougher sport to follow this time of year. And that's something that ideally we could find ways as an industry to address, but, you know, I don't think any individual team can be expected to trade off what's best for them just to make that splash.
Like I said, Chaim, it used to be where this week that we're sitting in right now, it was vacation week. Offices were shut. Am I wrong? I mean, this was the week.
No, you're not wrong. It hasn't really been that way this year, huh?
No, well, thank you, San Diego Padres, for that. You know, so speaking of which, You come on OMF and on this station, and you said that being at your time in the Rays, you understood how they worked, that they were going to explore anything. It didn't matter if you were in the division or not in the division. With the Blake Snell situation, did you have conversations with the Rays?
That's not something I would ever want to get into in detail, but I would just say generally, we try to be involved in everything. Now, with a deal like that, What that deal amounted to was taking an enormous amount of longer term value and, you know, pushing it into the here and now and pushing it into the short term. So, you know, when you look at the amount of talent that, that came back for Blake and the length of time over which that talent can impact the Rays, you know, that that's exactly the sort of deal I think that, you know, given the cost, given the price tag, would not make sense for where we're positioned right now. I think it would put us, you know, further behind in our goal to, you know, win as many championships as we can over the course of the long term. So, you know, it's our job to be involved in everything, and we're remiss if we don't check in on every player who might be available. But when it comes to taking an enormous amount of value and consolidating it into a smaller amount that impacts you right now, I think that's the opposite of what we need to look to do at the moment.
Well, you must have looked at where Eric Neander was there, and I don't want to say felt for him, but you've been in that situation. I mean, you guys had to trade David Price, you had to trade other people and get back what you really, really hoped were the building blocks for the future. So, and I'm sure you've talked to Eric just as a friend maybe, but it must be a very, very difficult thing to get to that point in that sort of organization where you're like, okay, we know we got to reset things. We have to do this every couple years, and this is going to be a painful, painful thing, but it's just a fact of life.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's painful emotionally, but I think, you know, what you can't let that distract from is the fact that the reason that the Rays are as good as they are right now is because they had the guts to do these things, even though they were painful. You know, regardless of what your budget is, it's certainly more critical to do it on a smaller budget, but on any budget, planning for the future and seeing around corners is important. And, you know, the Rays have figured out how to win over time because they place an emphasis on that. So, you know, I think as difficult as it is emotionally, you know, I think it's easy to look at that and say, man, you know, it's look at the Rays, look how they win, despite the fact that they do these things. I would argue they win because they do these things, because they recognize that in order to have a consistently bright future, they have to consistently place great emphasis on it. And when you do that relentlessly over time, you end up with a really good, really sustainable team, despite the limited budget that they have. And that's what they've done. And I have no doubt they're going to be really good in 2021 and certainly beyond.
Pitching, Haim, clearly is a need for the Red Sox like it is for a lot of teams. The list is lengthy in terms of available free agents. I know you can't get into specifics necessarily in regards to players, but the situation with Sagano, who was a two-time Japanese Cy Young Award winner, he's out there. People have likened him to Zach Greinke, certainly maybe tantalizing talent. But is it difficult for you to analyze that in terms of the international talent pool when you're looking at a Sagano to bring him to Boston? Is that tough for you to make that analysis of whether he'll be a good fit?
I think it's more difficult in a sense than it is with a pitcher who's pitched a lot domestically, where you just have more information. But that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, a pitcher from that market is an unwise investment. I think the error bars are bigger around the guy. There's just a lot more unknowns when you're bringing someone over to compete in a different league, you know, on a different schedule than he's used to competing. But baseball is baseball. We have, you know, a number of examples, including in this organization, of guys coming from that market and having success. You know, I think we have, as an industry, a decent ability to predict how they'll do. So, you know, that's a market I think we need to involve ourselves in, just like any other.
Well, we had a couple of guys recently that were posted, scooped up by the Rangers and the Padres. And, you know, through that recruiting process, I remember when the Red Sox were showing interest in Ohtani, and they had jerseys made up of the Celtics, Bruins, Patriots, Red Sox, with Ohtani on the back.
Yep.
As a small part of the recruiting process. How does that process, or I guess, like, if you were in on those guys or the guys who are maybe going in forward, how has that process changed about recruiting these guys? And have you feel like you've gotten better at it as an organization of knowing, okay, this is what's going to get this guy here instead of these other places?
Yeah, I think, you know, excuse me, the Ohtani process was so unique because he was, of course, due to his age, he was subject to the bonus pool restrictions. So that really was not going to be about money. That was almost entirely about recruiting. So I think it drove the whole industry to a level of recruiting that, you know, really was in some ways new to all of us, because normally while the recruiting is important around the edges and these types of things, money talks. But that was a situation where it really was not going to be about money hardly at all at the end of the day. And it was all about the recruitment. And I think with some of these other guys, it's still a part of what you do. You want to put your best foot forward. You want to engage with the player to the extent that you can through the process and get to know them. I think there's a little less of that now, in obviously because it can't happen in person, but it's still something you do with those guys. But I think in different degrees with different players, the money is obviously going to be a huge factor. And I don't blame the players for that. You know, they want to make sure they're comfortable with where they go, and that is a factor in some cases. But this also, you never know how many chances you're going to have to set yourself up financially, and it's, you know, they're right to care about that as well.
In these two cases, a pitcher from Japan and infielder from South Korea, did you sense that there was a priority with each of them that they were putting at the top of the list? And hey, listen, different situations, different guys, like you said, maybe one prioritized money, maybe one prioritized position or spot in the rotation. Did you get a sense in what they were prioritizing?
Yeah, without getting too deep into it, just because, when these things are done with, unless we end up with a player, I don't like to get into too much detail because, I don't know that that's appropriate for us to do on a consistent basis. I think in different situations, you will sometimes see, especially when the money amount is smaller, there are other factors that come into play more. And, players will sometimes pick teams or pick from amongst similar offers based on certain other factors that are important to them. And look, whenever we're involved in that type of situation, we want to put our best foot forward and make sure that we can show a player how we can appeal to them. But people are different and everybody's got different things that they like and value. Money's part of that, but sometimes the other factors that are part of that. I think historically there's a certain type of player that draws to Boston, and there's certain types of players that would rather play elsewhere. And look, this place is not for everybody, and you want to make sure that the players that we're bringing here in those circumstances are guys that are going to thrive playing here and really want to be here.
Where do you stand, Chaim, on Jackie Bradley Jr.'s negotiations? Are those fluid or no?
Yeah, we're still in contact with him and have been consistently throughout the offseason. He actually, in the Globe recently talked about it, where that timetable is probably going to be a little longer. I would expect we're going to stay engaged with him and, hope it lines up, hope it makes sense for him, and hope, it fits our puzzle. You guys know, and I haven't been shy about saying it, just in the short time I got to know Jackie, I just became incredibly fond of him. Obviously, there's business aspect of it, too, for us and for him. But just emotionally speaking, I hope it works out.
Do you think the dam is going to break here, like, anytime soon? And I know it's the most unpredictable offseason that we've ever had, and we keep saying that every offseason, but this offseason more than anything. But there's always a time where you think, okay, this guy signs or that guy signs, and then things get rolling. Is that the case here, or is there a chance of anything happening? I say that very selfishly, just wanting to maybe take a few days off.
Oh, boy. It's all about Bradford.
Yeah, I hear you. I think all of us in this business, our families in particular, would be right there with you, wanting to know when are you not going to be checking your phone every 10 minutes to see if there's some news on one of these many fronts that we have open. I don't know. I think this offseason, of all the ones that I've participated in since I started in this game, I think this has been the most unpredictable because of these factors surrounding the coronavirus. Some of them, as we discussed, might just be continuations of some trends that already existed in our business, but the virus is taking them to a whole other level. So, look, we're going to at some point look up, and all these guys will have found homes, and then these things will all sort themselves out. What pace that's going to happen at, I think, is really hard to predict. I would bet we do see kind of a consistent flow of things, and some weeks will be busier and some weeks will be less busy. Certainly as we get some definition on some of the issues surrounding our industry and, what spring training is going to look like and, protocols and restrictions around attendance and things like that, as those take shape, I think that will help things. But of course, we don't really know exactly when we're going to get more definition on those. This is just unprecedented, what we're going through as a country, in terms of now starting, you know, thank goodness, like a mass vaccination effort that hopefully is going to make life a lot more pleasant for so many of us. But and it's going to impact our business too. And we just have to wait and see what impact that has. Doesn't mean we can't do business in the meantime, but I think the more certainty, the more clarity we get on that front, the easier it's going to be for us and for all of our competitors to plan.
Speaking of unpredictability, do you sense that in the coming months, there'll be any change in Dustin Pedroia's status at all? Or is this just sort of a wait and see thing?
Yeah, we continue to talk to him. I mean, look, you guys know him a lot better than I do. I'm not sure there's anybody that has played the game of baseball during the time that I've been in it that is, tries harder to get out on the field and cares more about playing than Dustin. There might be some people tied for first with him, but he is the ultimate grinder. And so, you know, he's obviously continuing to grind. We continue to talk to him and we'll see where this goes. I mean, it's really at the end of the day, you know, a lot of it, we're taking our cues from Dustin, as he moves forward through this process and figuring out how he feels and what's next for him. I don't know that, you know, I have any more clarity to provide than that, other than that we continue to stay in touch with him and, stay in contact with him, help him throughout this process and just see where it takes us.
The Heim Bloom checklist, everybody has one in the off season. When you went into this offseason, we know the uncertainty well documented, but when you sat down with your variety of people on your staff, what was your target base? Where are you going besides pitching?
You mean in terms of like what players we might look at?
I know you can't get into specific George Springers of the world, but what's your Heim Bloom, that list you keep in your pocket or on your computer for modern day, what's the Heim Bloom checklist look like in the 2020 offseason?
Well, right now there's a lot of players on it. And, you know, part of that is a function of where we are, where there's a lot of different ways we can improve. And part of it is how we're looking to improve, where I think in the short term, you know, we have touched base with, you know, so many different players who we think could help us and could fit us. And that's, you know, pitching, obviously, but also on the position player side. I think there's different ways we can improve and different, you know, profiles of players we can bring in to help us. And, you know, we also don't want to take our eye off the ball that at the end of the day, you know, we're not just looking to put a little plaster in here and patch some holes. We are looking to take this organization back to where we can compete for championships consistently year in and year out. And that means we got to be open to different moves, different acquisitions that might not be just about 2021. Now, I think we have enough talent here that we should be able to compete and win along the way there. But there are some things we've explored and, you know, some things we've kicked around that might be able to impact us, you know, even more in future years than they might be in 2021. So I know that's not very specific, but it just speaks to that there's a lot of different ways that we can improve. And our number one question we ask ourselves on anybody is, you know, is this pushing us towards that goal of sustaining a championship contender here? And, you know, if the answer is yes, then we can explore it further. We can figure out how it impacts us in the near term, what it might mean for other players. And, you know, hopefully we check as many of those boxes as possible. I would hope that by the end of this offseason, there's a number of different guys we brought in here. But there's certain, you know, possibilities on the trade market, creative things that could come together. They may not, because those things are harder to do. They take at least two to tango. But, you know, different things that hopefully can impact us beyond just this year as well.
The last question is from me, Heim, and thanks for your time today. Number one was Zach Scott's going to the Mets. He was the head of the analytics department. How are you going to fill in that gap? Do you have someone in mind to sort of step up into his role if there is going to be someone? And secondly, are you actually going to have to be near a phone on New Year's Eve?
Two really good questions, and I'm glad you brought Zach up because, you know, it gives me a chance to kind of salute all of his work that he did. This guy, you know, spent, 17 plus years here, was here for all four championships in this century, has had a remarkable impact on this organization. And, you know, when this opportunity opened with the Mets to work, you know, really closely with Jared Porter, who's one of his best friends in the game, and, you know, just have an entirely new set of career experiences with all the upside that opportunity provides. It was the right thing for him. And, I think when that happens, you know, someone who's contributed as much as he has here, our job is to encourage him to go for it and to cheer him on. But, you know, his impact here has been profound. And more, although he did build more than anybody the analytics department that is here, I think his impact, especially in recent years, has been beyond just being an analytics guy. There's a number of different areas that he oversaw. He had a hand in really everything we were doing. You know, I didn't get to work with him nearly as long as most of my teammates, but I just really appreciate both, you know, how his mind works, how he thinks about the game, and also the person that he is. And we'll be cheering for him, except when we have to play those guys. But we're glad he's in the National League so we can cheer for him a little bit more. As far as who's going to step up, it's obviously big shoes to fill. I think it's a credit to how he managed the areas that he oversaw, that those departments are in really good hands. And we're still talking through exactly how we're going to align things. You know, we're always looking to build out our bench, so to speak. I think staff development for good organizations is just as important as player development. And the good thing is that some of those department heads that reported to Zach are really capable and ready to take on more. There's going to be some shuffling of some responsibilities and reporting lines, and we're going to be able to challenge some of the capable people we have here with some greater responsibility. But that's the way of the world. I mean, that was part of my career, it was part of Zach's career, and it gives good people an opportunity to step up. And the Red Sox have always been a good organization for as long as I competed against them, and now coming here, and we have some really good people who are ready to contribute to a greater extent.
And the phone on New Year's Eve.
I am really hopeful. I would say this. I am hopeful from a personal life standpoint and for the sake of my family and my marriage that there comes a point tomorrow we can say, okay, I think we're done for the night. Now, we're not going to be going out partying, but maybe we can sit there and have a bottle of champagne and watch the ball drop if we can keep our eyes open long enough, which is harder with the age of our kids and how much they tire us out during the day. Now, that said, if something comes up and somebody's crazy enough to call us at 9 or 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve with something that can make the Red Sox better, I'm all for it. But I'm hopeful I'm not going to turn my phone off. But I think for the sake of all of us, we should probably just take at least a few hours off and chill and welcome in what will hopefully be a better, healthier, and much more uplifting 2021.
Well, you deserve to celebrate on New Year's Eve. You've gone through a lot in the 2020, as we all have, but professionally, it's been quite a first full year with the Red Sox. So
memorable.
Yes, memorable. So,
no question. Well, we're looking forward to hopefully creating some better memories for our fans than we were able to create this year. We appreciate everybody hanging with us. I mean, this is a really tough year, especially a tough year in Boston and New England. And, you know, we know we weren't exactly part of generating a lot of good memories this year, and we've got some work to do. But we're getting after it, and like I said, we're looking forward to better days ahead, and we appreciate everybody hanging with us.
What does your gut say about starting the season on time? Are we looking at early April or a June start?
You know, I don't know. We are optimistic. Right now we're planning for an on-time start, but there's so many different things that go into it. We just have to plan, you know, to start on time, and then it's much easier to adjust and be in a holding pattern than it is to have to scramble if we weren't ready. So, you know, we're planning for an on-time start, and we'll see what happens.
All right, Chaim Bloom, a pleasure. Happy New Year to you and your family. Enjoy some quiet time tomorrow night, we hope. And thanks so much for joining us on the Harbor One Hotline.
Sounds good. And thank you, guys. Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to everybody out there.
Thanks, Chaim.
Thank you. Chaim Bloom, Red Sox Chief Baseball Information Officer on the Harbor One Hotline with Meter and Bradford, Sports Radio, WEEI.